Capital Investment Committee for April 8th is called to order. This remote hearing is taking place in accordance to House Rule 10.01 and is being live streamed by the House Public Information Office. Mr. Lanchesky, please take the roll.
Murphy present.
Ms. Nash, is Mr. Lanchesky on?
He's not. I can do the roll though.
Okay.
Chair Lee?
Lee present.
Vice Chair Murphy?
Murphy present.
Lead Erdo? Rep Abaje?
Present.
Rep Berg?
Present.
Rep Davids?
Davids present.
Rep Frankie?
Present.
Rep Freiberg?
Present.
Rep Hansen?
Present.
Rep Hewitt?
Present.
Rep Lilly?
Present.
Rep Lucero?
Good morning.
Good morning. Rep Moran?
Present.
Rep Pearson?
Pearson present.
Rep Raleigh?
Raleigh present.
Rep Rasmussen?
Rasmussen present.
Rep Ryer?
Present.
Rep West?
Present.
Rep Zhang Jay?
Present.
Quorum is present.
Thank you, Ms. Nash. A quorum is present. Representative Murphy, can I have a motion to approve the minutes for April 6th?
I move approval of the minutes for April 6th as printed.
Representative Murphy, move approval of the minutes for April 6th. Any discussions? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails and the minutes for April 6th is approved. Members, we will have a number of equity bill hearings today on an informational basis only. Each presentation is allotted 5 minutes or even less will be better. With one testifier, I will strictly enforce the time limit so that we can get all the bills in. The first bill is Representative Hassan, House File 1871. Please proceed, Representative Hassan.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. I have internet issues, so you won't see me on camera today. Thank you for the opportunity to present House File 1871, an act relating to capital investment, appropriating money for improvement to the Native American Community Clinic in the city of Minneapolis. The Native American Community Clinic is a nationally recognized community health clinic and federally qualified health center in South Minneapolis that provides comprehensive behavioral health, dental, and primary care services to the Twin Cities Native American community. NAC serves over 5,000 patients annually, 94% of whom live below the 200% poverty guidelines, and over 80% of who are from the Native American community. NAC has been the center of so many talents in the recent years. They serve many people experiencing homelessness. They have been leaders in finding novel ways to address the opioid epidemic. They are located 2 miles away from where George Floyd was murdered, and they have been leaders in COVID testing and vaccinations for underserved communities over the past year. As we all know, Native American patients have far worse health outcomes than their white counterparts. For 6 of the 7 Minnesota community measurements, MNCM, and substance abuse and mental health issues are significantly and disproportionately affect the Native community. While incidence rates for disease are higher and the need for primary care services are greater, trauma-informed treatment options that address the need for this population are in drastically short supply. It's widely acknowledged that culturally specific approaches rooted in traditional forms of healing and medicine significantly improve the outcome for Native American community in the healthcare system. The Native American Community Clinic is located in the American Indian Cultural Corridor in my district in South Minneapolis. The largest concentration of Native Americans in Minnesota are urban dwellers who reside in South Minneapolis within 1 to 3 mile radius around the NAC's location. They reside in South Minneapolis. The majority of these residents report challenge in accessing quality healthcare services. Last session, NAC requested $6 million, but in the end received $3.8 million for phase one to purchase the building where they are located. That phase one funding granted last year was absolutely critical to their mission. That funding allowed NAC to purchase the building that they have occupied for nearly 2 years, two decades in the American Indian Cultural Corridor at Franklin Avenue in South Minneapolis. The $2.2 million for phase two we're requesting this session includes improvement and modernization of the current footprint, as well as the build out of the newly equipped clinic footprint. When finished, the project would create additional 10 medical rooms, 5 dental exam rooms, expanded laboratory and diagnostic services, and in-clinic pharmacy. The expansion will allow NAC to serve additional 2,000 new patients and combine 5,000 additional visits annually. With that, Mr. Chair, I have a testifier with me who would further explain the need for this project and will stand for questions. Thank you.
Dr. Staley, you have 1 minute. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning, representatives. I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you. My name is Dr. Anthony Staley. I'm the CEO of the Native American Community Clinic in South Minneapolis. Thank you, Representative Hassan, for the introduction and a wonderful overview of the work we're doing. I appreciate it very much. Native American Community Clinic has been very successful over the last 4 years under my leadership and successfully competing for and acquiring and obtaining large federal investments in helping us to expand our behavioral health footprint, which is probably one of the biggest critical needs that we have in our community. Under that strategy, we have been able to significantly expand our capacity to deliver mental health services, Suboxone services to people struggling with opiate use disorder, and to serve more of our, and to expand our outreach program, which helps us to serve more of our homeless population in South Minneapolis, which if you watch the news, you know that we're significantly overrepresented in that population in the urban core of both Minneapolis and St. Paul. The challenge with that is that we have, as we have been able to get those grants and expand and deliver on our care model, our integrated care model, which includes culturally centered care. We have elders and residents that provide cultural and traditional healing services to our community. We have had to put our programs in spaces outside of our clinic, which has been significantly challenging to operating an integrated model that we have had for several years now.
Dr. Staley, can I have you wrap up, please?
Sure. This opportunity will help us to be able to modernize our clinic, which is needs significant renovation, and will also allow us to bring everybody back underneath one roof and be able to deliver better on our model.
Thank you, Dr. Staley. Next up, we have Representative Hansen's draft language code is CG-105. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. This is a provision for the remaining slaughterhouses in South St. Paul. South St. Paul is still designated as a redevelopment area by the federal government from the loss of the slaughterhouses and packing plants over a generation ago. These slaughterhouses in South St. Paul draw a very diverse community from around the whole metro area and even into Wisconsin. I believe even the chair has slaughtered some cows at the facility. However, it is an old facility, and there is an opportunity for redevelopment and building a new facility here that could really be a star for the whole metropolitan area. If you visit the slaughterhouse, you will see older Hmong women slaughtering chickens. There are goats and sheep and cattle and pigs, and it's right close by if anybody wants to have a tour. So I have with me today Ryan Garcia, supporting Bill 21-03983 to provide for redevelopment and for these businesses for equity. It is one of the most substantial things we could do to provide for food in the metropolitan area.
Mr. Garcia, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Yes, good morning. Chair Lee, thank you. Representative Hansen, committee members, my name is Ryan Garcia. I'm the Director of Economic and Community Development for the City of South St. Paul. I think Representative Hansen provided a really good summary. the facilities. So, you know, South St. Paul's legacy as a major manufacturer of food products, not only for our metro area, but really for the entire world, is longstanding. And while we have diversified and evolved with the loss of the major food manufacturers that existed here over a generation ago, we still do hold strong to that legacy. Obviously, our high school is the Packers. Once a Packer, always a Packer. And we do value the continued operation of these vital and essential services and businesses in our community. We understand that they represent a really good embodiment, frankly, of the American dream with immigrant owners that are looking to grow their facilities, looking to grow their businesses, unfortunately, in facilities that are now over 75 years old, are prohibitively expensive to upgrade and repair and have significant deficiencies with respect to the ability to expand within those facilities and on those sites. So the city has been working with our continued operators to identify locations in South St. Paul and to vet those locations. We feel like we have solutions to help them with their real estate needs, and certainly would embrace the opportunity to be their partner in facilitating a generation of sustainable growth for their businesses and in upgraded new facilities. So I'm happy to help answer any questions, or we'll yield to the chair.
Thank you, Mr. Garcia. Representative Frankie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to speak positively of this project and thank Representative Hansen for bringing this bill forward. These businesses are in a city which I share with Representative Hansen in representation, and there's definitely a cultural need for these businesses, and they bring commerce to our area from all over the Twin Cities and beyond. So once again, thank you, Representative Hansen, for bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative Frankie, for your work too with Representative Hansen on this. Representative Zhang, quick comment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say that this is more than just a slaughterhouse. It's a cultural hub for many of our refugee immigrant families. So I hope that we can consider this legislation as we talk about equity.
Thank you, Representative Zhang. So next on the agenda is two bills for Representative Zhang. The first one is House File 1554. Please proceed, Representative Zhang.
Can you remind me which one is 1554?
30,000 feet.
All right, 30,000 feet. Thank you, Mr. Chair. 30,000 feet is an institution right here on the east side of St. Paul. Its mission is to advance the academic success of African-American youth and families through culturally responsive arts and tech education, social-emotional learning, and African-American history and culture. Since its founding in 2013, they have served over 2,500 students in St. Paul, and they do it through their core programs, which one of them is after-school programming, a Black Tech Geeks program, and an artist residency program. And so I, without further ado, I'll just leave it here and let my testifier, Ms. Vanessa Young, speak more to the great work that they're doing.
Ms. Young, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Absolutely. Thank you. My name is Vanessa Young. I'm the program director, at 30,000 feet. Thank you, Chair Lee, for giving me time to speak, and Representative Zhang for authoring the bill, and Rep. Erdahl and Thompson for meeting with us, and thank you, Rena, for continuing to support our work. So since our existence, we've been helping students enter into the tech field with there's about 9,000 job openings in Minnesota in the tech field that students of color have not traditionally gone into, and we want to help stop that from happening and help them to get into the field. We're also helping students combat summer learning loss, where students lose on average 36% of their school year gains and a whopping 50% of the school year gains of in math, and that keeps growing as they get older. In addition to combating summer learning loss, we help youth with arts learning, which encourages fine motor skills, neurodevelopment, problem-solving abilities, and competencies that allow for greater success in a more traditional subjects like reading, writing, and science and math. And so as we reimagine the rest of 2021 together, we will be on the ground working to create the first space where Black youth in St. Paul can be their authentic selves to help us make a better Minnesota by proactively investing in their collective success. The Black Arts Center will provide a space for both creative learning experience and overcoming barriers to employment through paid art and tech apprenticeships. Each apprenticeship completion will be for a minimum of 6 months where youth can help bring additional income to their homes. And they'll be making about $15 an hour, working 15 to 20 hours a week to enter into the tech field. The center will provide a safe space for daytime academic support for youth who are continuously suspended from school, increase the number of Black youth who gain meaningful employment through apprenticeships, and decrease teen violence and recidivism on the East Side by providing a space for restorative justice in year-round apprenticeships. Our program has operated in communities, schools, libraries, rec centers, churches, and our program has outgrown many of these spaces. So we're asking that House File 1554 allocates $1.5 million in the capital investment to go towards purchasing a dedicated space. The 4,000 square foot center will be located on the east side of St. Paul, as Representative Zhang mentioned. It will include a space for multidisciplinary art, computer science lab, a makerspace, library slash bookstore, and a common area, an art gallery, and two small offices. We plan to double our impact by continuing to strengthen our programs and simply doubling the number of students that we serve. To help us carry the burden of cost, thus far, we have secured over $200,000 in support for this project from crowdfunding, private foundations like H.B. Fuller, Best Buy, Ramsey County, and USA Today. And we look forward to building a better future together. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Ms. Young. Chair Moran?
Good morning, everyone, and Chair Lee, thank you for bringing this bill forward, and Representative Young, Zong, from bringing this bill forward. Real quick, I just want to speak in support of the bill. 30,000 Feet, who has been around for over 8 years, formerly known as New Abam, has been really a foundation on the east side of St. Paul, working with youth year-round, just strengthening their skills, their knowledge base, the relationships and the connections, and what we need to make sure that our youth is striving to be the best that they can be. I just want to just lift up the work that they have done and continue to do around the youth apprenticeship pieces. They have been in places, as we heard from Ms. Young, from communities, from schools, from library, just to make the work that they do impactful. So again, I just want to speak in support of 30,000 Feet and just introduce to this legislative body the great work that they have been doing and would like to continue to do through an expanded space. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Moran. Next on the agenda is Representative Zhang's bill, House File 2382. Representative Zhang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is another great institution right here in St. Paul. The Funny Asian Woman Collective was founded in 2013 to do a lot of great programming. I remember hearing about this group several years ago after graduating from college and hearing from many of my friends about the great work that they were doing to combat and tackle many of the systemic problems in our community. And so without further ado, today I have Ms. Maylee Yang here to testify to share more about the institution and what this legislation will do for our community here in Minnesota.
Ms. Lee Yang, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, everybody. My name is Maylee Yang, and I'm one of the co-founders of Funny Asian Women Collective, also known as FOC. I am an Eastside resident and homeowner, and first of all, I'd like to thank Representative Sean for championing this bill and Chair Lee for giving us the space to hear our story. So first of all, I am Hmong American artist, and when I was growing up, theater did not exist in the Hmong community. In fact, the first Hmong theater company internationally was birthed right here in St. Paul, Minnesota in 1994. 27 years later, there is still no physical space to host Hmong stories, and there is no Pan-Asian American Art Center. to be sure, there are many Asian American arts organizations in existence in Minnesota, but we are constantly guests in someone else's house. Fox centers our work around Asian Pacific Islander Desi American stories because Apidas are the country's fastest growing racial group. Yet Apidas are one of the most underrepresented groups in TV, film, and entertainment. Between 2007 and 2017, we only made up 3.2% of all folks in the film sector. The Twin Cities is home to the most diverse, one of the most diverse Apida populations, and we have the largest concentration of Hmong in the United States. Fresno, California can fight me on this if they'd like. We also comprise 32% of the East Side, and yet less than 2% of Eastsiders report working in the arts, entertainment, and recreation industry. So this is Fox Story. We were founded in 2014 to combat the invisibility and dehumanization of Asian Pacific Islander Desi American women using comedy and humor. I'd like to just show a quick couple photos to give you an idea of what we do. Okay. So we use comedy, performance, art, and storytelling to navigate controversial issues such as race, gender, patriarchy. Our program includes curating live performances, workshops, and trainings. These are photos from a show we did at the Orderway Center for Performing Arts in 2019. And I just want to note that the recent shootings in Atlanta and the rise of xenophobia, particularly assaults against Asian women in this country, is a clear demonstration that there is an increased need to see more Asian American stories, to see more of our humanity. Our vision with this bonding bill is to create the first pan-Asian American women-led state-of-the-art multimedia and performing arts center open to all. This will be the first center of its kind. This is kind of crazy, right? First of its kind, not just in St. Paul, not just in Minnesota, but in the nation. Not even California in New York, who think they're pretty artsy and diverse and cool, has such a space. The Asian American Center for Media Arts will have a large soundstage, recording studios, a 300-seat theater. In this photo, there's actually, I think, 900 seats. So community rooms and a gallery for visual art. We know that there is a need for more art centers in St. Paul, and particularly the East Side, spaces that hold collaborations, performances, creative and economic incubations, mentorships, and more. We're asking for funds to support the acquisition of property, pre-design, design, site preparation, and pre-construction, and renovation. So we feel strongly that the existence of an Asian American Media and Performing Arts Center can not only become a home for new stories, but it can be a space to build community across cultures and also build wealth for our city. The first time I saw a play that centered around a Hmong story, it was powerful to see my experiences reflected on the stage. The problem with live performances is that it is fleeting. This art center, which will not only hold live performances, but also create video work, is important not just for FOC. It is an institution that can hold stories for generations long after we have retired. It is a legacy that we can leave behind, again, not just for St. Paul, not just for Minnesota, but for the United States. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ms. Lee Ying, for being on time. Next up, we have Representative Thompson, House File 2400. Representative Thompson, you're on mute right now.
I'm so excited you called my name. But listen, Chair, I'm excited to present to you my bill, which is House File 2400, that will bring investments to shovel-ready project for the east side of St. Paul. I feel like I heard that like 20 times already. But owned and led by the Latino Economic Development Center, what was LEDC. And this type of community development project that I'm interested in, like the East Side needs investments from our state. And this is the first project that I bring forth to this committee. La Plaza de Sol, located at 900 Payne Avenue in St. Paul, recently has been acquired by LEDC with the intention to support the diverse small businesses in our district and in my neighborhood. However, the building is in need of some capital improvements. And the recent acquisition of Plaza de Sol by LEDC has helped businesses that would have been displaced. And because of the LEDC, these businesses will continue to serve our community by providing culturally and logistically the appropriate services and goods. Because of what LEDC does and is intended to do with this building is what they do best. This is what they do best, and that is continue to serve small businesses as a small business incubator, housing several small businesses at any given time. It would also include a commercial kitchen inside of this building, which can be utilized by 20 plus food vendors for food catering services for individuals starting their own business. You know, this would include a second floor with office space, and this space could be utilized by small businesses and nonprofits, along with classroom space, which will continue to serve as a hub for GED training and other training, English entrepreneurships and classes to the east side, which our kids definitely need. It will also include space that will be accessed by small business, nonprofits, and families for their professional or cultural functions. My community is much need of this space and this investment from you guys here, I mean, chairing this body. Mr. Chair, members, I urge you to support this project on the St. Paul. And I would like to yield for any questions, if you have any, but I would like to give Henry Jimenez just a few minutes, if you will, Chair.
Mr. Jimenez, you have less than 2 minutes. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Again, my name is Henry Jimenez, Executive Director of the Latino Economic Development Center. I did have a little bit more than 2 minutes, but I'm going to say that Representative Thompson did a great job telling you about the project. I'm excited about what we can do in St. Paul. What I want to make sure I say to this committee right now is I'm actually somewhat emotional to see all these projects, and we're not even halfway there. This is the type of project that the future of Minnesota really needs. These are communities that definitely all deserve these type of projects. And so, Representative Lee, members of the committee, I actually think you're doing history today to be able to hear these type of projects. And so I thank you for that. Going back to our LEDC project in the east side of St. Paul, I just want you to know this is a building that LEDC has recently acquired. Every narrative, every rhetoric I hear from legislators, from the governor to legislators to congressional members, it's exactly what we're doing here today, not just LEDC, but everybody that's mentioning it. Everybody's talking about BIPOC ownership and property. Well, here we are. Here's a project that LEDC has that we have purchased, and we have put all of our financial efforts in. We have a plan of what other resources are going to be coming for this project. We're just asking the state to do its part in helping us get to the finish line, just like many of these other projects. Some of your attachments to this to this bill 2400, you'll see our breakdown. I mean, you'll see our investment from LEDC. You'll see the pre-development grant money. You'll see the type of Neighborhood Star money at the municipal level, our capital campaign, the state funds. I mean, we even got a lobbyist for this, folks. I'm telling you, every checkbox you have ever asked of LEDC or any of our organizations to do, we have done. I am ready for questions, but what I could tell you is that the east side of St. Paul definitely needs to be invested in, and this is a perfect building to invest in. I look forward to Representative Thompson continuing to bring his family to the building. I know he visits it all the time. He walks by it every day. I look forward to being able to show you what we're actually capable of doing. This is not a theory, folks. This is a reality. This will happen.
Thank you, Mr. Jimenez. Next up, we have Chair Noor, House File 2398.
Thank you so much, Chair Lee and members. Thank you for the opportunity to present this bill, 2398. It is for healthcare workforce development. First of all, I just wanted to recognize this week as the National Public Health Week and for their contribution, especially during this COVID-19 pandemic. A strong public health worker is vital to protecting all individuals, whether we are in Minnesota or anywhere in the world. So this bill, Mr. Chair and members, is to purchase the building, which is a few blocks away from my building, which used to be my clinic, the Health Partners Clinic, and convert it to becoming a center for new Americans and also be able to provide the workforce development for public health. Members, as you're aware of, the American Rescue Plan provided various funding. One of the funding is to help establish expand public health workers, and it's an opportunity for us to really invest in a workforce development that will be training public health workers and getting the resources from the federal government. This is an opportunity for us to work with the University of Minnesota, with employers, with other agencies to really develop a robust system that provides a family-sustaining wage for individuals who are looking for an opportunity to be in the healthcare workforce development. We cannot miss this opportunity by not investing in a site that is already ready. It was built in 1991. It's no longer being used as a clinic. It's ready to serve in terms of that training purpose. It's connected to the mHealth. It's right next to the University of Minnesota. It's an ideal site for us to invest in, and also to be able, as the chair for the workforce development, to go for that resources that is already at the table to allow us to develop the next generation, the future in public health work. So I'll ask for your support. It's about less than $10 million. I'm hoping that we can do it, and I'm asking for your support. Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I'm ready to answer any question that you may have.
Chair Noor, I understand that your testifier had some technical issue. Is your testifier on?
Mr. Chair, with so many internet connection issues, I don't see my testifier online.
Okay. Well, we don't see any questions, so thank you, Chair Noor. Next up is Chair Mariani, House File 2466. Chair Mariani, you have 3 minutes for this presentation.
Super. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill makes technical changes to a bond allocation that was made in 2018 to support workforce training provided by the HAP, the Hmong American Partnership. Their facilities are located in my district. Their bricks and mortar challenges were pretty severe. They were very incredibly limited to provide important services that they do to our county. And nonetheless, HAP has done just stellar, amazing work partnering with Ramsey County, providing training and job placement for MnFIP participants, working with young people to connect them to customized job training programs, et cetera. This bill makes several technical changes. It replaces the city of St. Paul with Ramsey County. It deletes unnecessary language to pre-design and design. It just keeps focus on the acquisition proposal. It also allows a childcare facility to be recognized within the project because there's a strong synergy between providing benefits to training participants with those kind of services. And finally, if this committee has the ability, converting this project to a cash investment provides us a much simpler path to finishing. I'm happy to be joined by Bao Bang from the Hmong American Partnership, and she can provide very brief words for the committee as well.
Ms. Vane, you have less than a minute. Please proceed.
Thank you. Good morning, Chairman Lee and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to be here with you this morning. My name is Bao Vang, and I served as the president and CEO of the Hmong American Partnership for nearly 14 years until I retired in this past January. I'm currently an advisor to HAP's board of director and its interim executive director. First of all, I just want to reiterate our sincere appreciation and thank you to Representative Mariani and the many legislators and local officials who supported passing the bond allocation to HAP in 2018. The support of the state in 2018 jumpstart HAP's capital campaign process, and I'm here today to seek your support of making these technical changes so the bond allocation that was approved to HAP in 2018 can be realized. Again, I thank you so much for this opportunity and for your support, and I'd be more than happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Ms. Vang, and thank you, Chair Mariani, for that presentation. Next up, we have Chair Becker Finn, language code of CG102-1. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So earlier this year, my cousin Michael died at the age of 36 from COVID. Like me, he grew up in Cass Lake on the Leech Lake Reservation, and there are not a lot of large gathering places in my home community, but our Veterans Memorial Building is one of them. Michael served 12 years in the Air Force, so it was a given that we would hold his funeral there. The Leech Lake Vet Center is one of those buildings used so often by people in the community for funerals, graduation parties, community meals, meetings, programming, powwows that, like many of us, I had become accustomed to its perpetual state of disrepair as it was built in 1980. But in February, as I was helping to set up chairs for the funeral, it hit me how sad it is that this building where we celebrate our community's accomplishments and send off our warriors is falling apart in multiple ways. So I started to make some phone calls, and I am incredibly proud to bring this bill before you today. Rebuilding what the folks in the community call the Vet Center has been on Leech Lake's list of buildings in need of repair, but with 11 tribal communities within the large reservation and uncertain times, the funds are very much needed so that we can build something that properly shows the respect we have for those who have served and continue to function as a gathering place for everyone in the community. Also, a modern building could be made more accessible for our veterans and elders who have disabilities. I do want to emphasize that many people in the community would benefit from this space, not just veterans. For those who aren't familiar, the Leech Lake Reservation is several hours north of St. Paul, with the largest nearby city being Bemidji. Over 10,000 people call the Leech Lake area home, which includes tribal members, but also many non-tribal members as well. The Vet Center is also located within just feet of the bleachers at our powwow grounds, and the facilities in the building are used by the public during the three large powwows held there each year. Visiting dancers and other visitors travel to the area from all over the country as well as Canada, so there's an important economic piece involved for the larger community as well. Chimigwich to Chair Lee for hearing this important bill, even though the impetus to move it forward came a bit later in the game. The Leech Lake community was hit hard over the last year, and now would be an incredibly meaningful time to move forward with this project. The bill is in the hopper, so it will have a number by tomorrow. Again, Miigwech, for your time and attention. When it's safe to do so, I would love to host any of you to see the building and attend a powwow. And if you do make the drive up, I would even likely buy you a piece of fry bread. And so with that, I will turn it over to my testifier, Clinton Fairbanks.
Thank you, Chair Beckerfin. Mr. Fairbanks, you have less than 3 minutes. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Clinton Fairbanks. I am Government Relations. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. Chair Lee, members of the Capital Investment Committee, it is with deep respect that I am requesting funding to be approved for a replacement building for the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe. The original building was designed roughly 3,000 square feet in 1980. There were additions added on in 1991, which added approximately 1,000 extra square feet to bring the total to about 4,100 square feet. This building has served its purpose through its 40 years, holding hundreds, if not thousands, of funerals, wakes for LLBO band members, specifically for our veterans, as well as non-band members and even non-Native respected community members. Thousands of cultural Native naming ceremonies, spiritual healing ceremonies, birthday parties, craft making sessions, Native regalia making, beading, and other cultural gatherings. Community fundraisers. And the facility is open to the public for showers, shelters, changing areas for powwows held annually. It is even used to be held at boxing events and boxing training. However, as you can see below, this very old facility and the cost of the building's maintenance and heating are higher every year. It is serious in need of replacement in order to continue to serve our veterans and the greater LLBO community for generations to come. Additionally, this new building would be a critical upgrade to the whole Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe Veterans Memorial Grounds. Most recently, Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe received a grant from the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs and the Veterans Cemetery Grant Program 2019, and we have built the only tribal veteran cemetery in the state of Minnesota and have been recognized as a Blue Star Award winner of the Veteran Cemetery in the state of Minnesota. Thank you for considering and for your hard work on funding on many important priorities before the House Capital Investment Committee. We are looking forward to answering questions and providing additional information to the committee, and we would welcome you to visit the Veterans Memorial Building site when it becomes possible. Miigwech.
Thank you, Mr. Fairbanks, and thank you, Chair Beckerfin. Next up, we have Representative Egbaje, House File 2462. Please proceed.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. This morning I'm presenting House File 2462. It is a project meant to support community members after the events of this past year. So from the effects of the pandemic and the killing of George Floyd, people, especially young people, are hurting. The organization 846seconds.org developed out of that need to help young people through this difficult time by providing mental health resources and a healing space to process. The funding we are requesting today would go towards the acquisition and construction of a building in South Minneapolis that would host a mental health facility, an artistic space, both for visual art and music, entrepreneurship training, and tutoring for young people. This is anticipated to be a one-stop wellness shop for community members, and 846seconds.org has already partnered with groups like Black Nurses Rock, Minnesota Black Nurses Association, and 612 MASH Clinic, among others, to provide such services to people within the community. The impact of such a location would be significant on a community of young people who have experienced so much in such a short period of time. To speak more on the impact that the center would have and the work that has already been done is my testifier, Isaac Dua.
Mr. Dua, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Hello, my name is Isaac Dua. Good morning, everyone. First off, I wanted to thank Chair Lee and the whole committee for this opportunity and Representative Baje for championing this bill. Like I said, my name is Isaac Dua. I'm a sitting board member of 846S.org, which is a Black youth mental health focused nonprofit that me and my father established over the summer. And I'm also a Minneapolis-based activist and community organizer. I'm 22 years old, and I grew up in the Longfellow neighborhood, four blocks away from the 3rd Precinct, and I graduated from South High School in 2016. When my neighborhood burned after the killing of George Floyd, I started distributing safety equipment and fire extinguishers during the day and volunteering as a security guard at George Floyd Square at 38th in Chicago at night. I experienced a lot of trauma that summer, as did most people in the South Side, especially young people, and on June 19th, I witnessed a murder. And my mother suggested that I go to therapy. So I eventually did, and after seeing the tangible difference in my ability to navigate my own emotions and take care of my own mental health, I wanted everyone and all my peers to have access to that mental health therapy. So over the summer of 2020, when I would take breaks from my community work and volunteering work to eat, I would park my car at empty lots all over the South Side, and that's when I started to dream of this Youth Mental Health Wellness Center. So I envisioned a building with lots of natural light and big windows in contrast to my experience at South High School, which for those of you who don't know, looks like a bunker and has very few windows. And in my winter months at South High School, I remember going to school early in the morning in the dark and leaving later in the day in the dark and not feeling the sunlight on my skin all day at school. The vision that I have for this building is a place of healing. A place ahead of its time, built sustainably with a focus on green energy and net zero. I envisioned a one-stop shop for wellness where a mother could meet a mental health care professional in their satellite offices right in the community while her children could get tutoring and homework assistance at the same time. This is in contrast to having to take 3-digit buses way out to the burbs or the suburbs to see therapists. I envisioned a place where young people could get guidance and support on their startups and entrepreneurial endeavors. And I envisioned a community gathering and event space where youth could have host events like art exhibits and launch parties and listen to guest speakers from all over the country and all over the world. I also envisioned a technology room where community members would have access to computers, IT training, tutoring, and homework assistance to helping youth acquire skills necessary for 21st century job opportunities. And finally, a youth-run coffee shop where people can read, study, relax, and imagine a better future. To wrap up my little testimony, I know that this community wellness center will be an amazing resource to my community, and I hope that I've enlightened you all a little bit more about the story behind this project and what kind of difference I know this proposal would make. Thank you for my time.
Thank you, Mr. Dua, and thank you, Representative Baje, for bringing this bill forward. Next up, we have Representative Gomez. A draft language code is CG103. Please proceed, Representative Gomez.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair and members of the committee for hearing this bill. This is to improve Mercado Central, which is an important institution in South Minneapolis. It's cooperatively owned and led by Latino small business owners, and it's really, over its 20 years, become a true hub and anchor of the community of Bloomington and Lake Street in South Minneapolis. So many people in the community shop there, and they also have a meeting space. They host a lot of community events, and really are a pillar. Last summer, many of the members of this body, I'm not sure if anybody on this call or not, but also the Senate, you know, the governor, congressional members visited Mercado Central because it was really in the epicenter of the uprising and was impacted during that time. So it is a cultural and economic hub that's created opportunity and fueled the kind of economic growth that, as Mr. Jimenez referenced in his earlier testimony, that we all talk about wanting to support here at the Capitol. It's kind of amazing that they, you know, they've really been through a lot over the years, and the fact the cooperative bought the building in the last few years is really an incredible achievement for this group. And, you know, there have been some improvements to the exterior of the building, but there are real kind of capital investment needs. And so the Mercado has always been a part of the community, but the state really needs to step up to help the Mercado continue to stay a pillar of the Lake Street Business Corridor. At this time, I just want to pass it over to Rosalba Herrera, and I want to thank her for her work. She's the chair of the Mercado Central Board, and she's going to say a few words about the Mercado and its needs, and she'll do some Spanish and we'll provide some interpretation.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Next up, Ms. Herrera, please identify yourself for the record, and for members, Mr. Jimenez is here to interpret. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Rosalba Herrera. I am the president of the board directors de la Cooperativa Mercado Central en Minneapolis. Quiero agradecer a cada uno de ustedes por la visita que nos hicieron el verano pasado después de los disturbios. Y aunque apreciamos sus visitas, la realidad es que necesitamos apoyo de ustedes. Establecida hace 21 años, la Cooperativa Mercado Central es el hogar de 33 pequeños negocios propiedad de latinos. La idea del Mercado Central nació de la necesidad que tenía la comunidad latina en el sur de Minneapolis de tener un espacio para reconectarse con su cultura. Gracias a un grupo de microempresarios visionarios que se organizó para formar una cooperativa latina y ofrecer un lugar que sirviera como el centro de la comunidad, el comercio, la cultura, desde sus inicios. El mercado ha sido un centro económico para la comunidad. En los últimos 21 años hemos podido superar dos recesiones económicas y ahora una pandemia, pero nuestro mercado necesita inversión de capital para reemplazo de techo, cimientos, pisos y estacionamiento. Estos son proyectos urgentes para seguir cumpliendo con nuestro compromiso y objetivos. Los elevados costos de estos proyectos han complicado realizarlos. Además, hemos sido afectados por la recesión económica causada por la pandemia de COVID-19. Por esta razón, solicitamos apoyo para realizar estos proyectos. Mercado Central es un emblema de la comunidad latina en el estado de Minnesota, especialmente en el sur de Minneapolis, y con su ayuda podremos mantener como tal. Gracias y siempre serán bienvenidos a Mercado Central.
Go ahead, Mr. Jimenez.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, for me to try to translate all that, I think it's going to be very difficult. So what we are going to do is provide a translated statement in English shortly here. But I just wanted to touch on a couple points she made. Obviously, she wants to thank all of you. A significant number of you actually visit the Mercado Central last summer and actually has continued to do so. I think it's important to note that in 21 years, they have overcome, you know, two recessions, the pandemic and just the aftermath of last summer in general. And, you know, we've had congressional members and folks come, but nobody's really invested in Mercado Central. And I think it's time to talk about that. If it's such an important stop in every tour from everyone to stop on Mercado Central, I think it's an important project to invest in. And it's, you know, as far as I'm aware, it hasn't really received much investment from the state. Again, we'll provide more testimony, but I wanted to say one last thing, and that's really to thank Rosalba Herrera and the Board of Mercado Central. It's really entrepreneurs like herself who have donated, volunteered her time to making an economic hub like Mercado Central successful. It's really her leadership. And we have many more Rosalba Herreras in our community, and I'm just glad that she's having a minute here with you to let you know about the great work she's done in McAllister. And thank you, Representative Gomez. And Mr. I think with that, I'll present a written English testimony for the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Jimenez. Representative Davids.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate that because I didn't understand the thing she said, so I don't know if this is a good project or a bad project or in-between project because I didn't understand anything. So I thank the gentleman for saying that he would get us the translation so we can read it and study it and make our decisions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Davids, for that, and thank you, Mr. Jimenez. Please provide that written testimony to Ms. Nash. Thank you, Chair Gomez. Next up, we have Representative Zhang, House File 875.
Bonjour again, Mr. Chair. This next bill is the African Economic Development Solution, and it's for a funding project for the Little Africa Plaza. Today I have Mr. Gene Gilguru, who will be here to share more about this.
Mr. Gilguru, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Lee and member of the committee. My name is Jean Galgalu, President and CEO at African Economic Development Solutions, AEDS, a nonprofit organization that serves African immigrants in Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to testify for House File 875, the $3 million allocated to African Economic Development Solutions, AEDS, for building rehab that is located at 678 Snelling Avenue, North St. Paul, Minnesota 55104. The building will activate a vacant and a condemned building in Hamlin Midway neighborhood in tax generating commercial asset. Located at 678 Avenue, the building was originally in 1920s era, a former Chevrolet dealership. After its rehabilitation, it will house immigrant owned grocery store, cultural clothes, the first African museum, cultural museum, and AEDS office. We received $200,000 from federal and $100,000 loan from the bank to purchase the abandoned building. The project will help stabilize neighborhood commercial corridor, serve the cultural food need for African immigrant population, and provide a taste of African cuisine and cultural for larger community, and mitigate displacement issues that we see. Entrepreneurship has been a route to prosperity and success for immigrants across the United States and in Minnesota. Today, small businesses continue to drive our economy and create 2/3 of new jobs nationally. Their job creation roles are particularly vital in immigrant communities where language and formal education barriers lack many individuals out of wider job market. AEDS has created a successful vehicle for harnessing African immigrant entrepreneurship spirit to create job and avenue out of poverty. AEDS, a nonprofit organization that has established in 2008 to serve African immigrant in Minnesota. Our mission is world building within African immigrant community. We achieve this through our programs, business development training, cultural specific technical assistance, lending, financial education, home ownership education, housing counseling, workforce development, and creative placemaking, which is the intersection of art and culture for economic development strategy. I request you support House File 875 to stabilize Hamlin neighborhood, Hamlin Midway neighborhood, and African immigrant to build a cultural hub for African immigrant and our region. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Gigalu, and thank you, Representative Zhang. Next up, we have Chair Lilly, draft language code at CG-109. Please proceed, Chair Lilly.
Thank you, Chair Lee and committee members. And this is for the Wakaan Tipi Center. It's in Representative Zhang's neighborhood right near the Capitol, and happy to work with Representative Zhang and carry this today and, you know, move it forward. It's a great project. If you, just to give you an idea where it is, when you were at that bridge that we have toured and we saw blocks falling, it's right there. It's underneath there in the Bento Nature Center. And And the Walk-On Teepee is going to be a great facility when we can finish it. And I know Representative Erdahl had it in his bill, and Representative Murphy as well, but they've had to move and had some problems. Today I have the director, Ms. Lawrence, and hopefully she can do a deeper dive here quick for you, Mr. Chair.
Florence, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Well, hello, good morning, everybody. Thank you, Chair Fu Lee and Vice Chair Murphy for hearing our project today, and Representative Lilly for championing this project today, as well as all the support, Representative Zhang. And I'm just really excited to be part of a powerful cohort of East Side leaders today that are presenting projects that are really going to shift the community here on the east side of St. Paul. So I'll just tell you a little bit about our project. My name is Maggie Lorenz, and I'm the executive director for Lower Phalen Creek Project and the Wilcon Teepee Center Development. And I'm really honored to be leading this project, which has been called Legacy Work by elders in our community. The Wilcon Teepee site itself is an ancient Dakota sacred site on the east side of St. Paul that includes a cave that is now known as Carver's Cave in Bruce Vento Nature Sanctuary, and the burial mounds at Indian Mounds Regional Park. So Wilcon Teepee Center will be located in the Bruce Vento Nature Sanctuary on St. Paul's east side, and we anticipate that we'll break ground this summer and complete construction in the fall of 2022. The project has already gained a $4 million capital investment from the state, so we thank you all for your support in that. And in addition, we've raised $2.5 million in private and federal funding for the project, including a highly competitive challenge grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities, along with support from the Margaret A. Cargill Fund of Minneapolis Foundation, the McKnight Foundation, McNeely, St. Paul Foundation, Bigelow, Hardenberg, Manitou Fund, and more. This 9,000 square foot cultural and environmental interpretive center will really be a one of its kind Indigenous-led space, creating a community gathering space, permanent indoor and outdoor and virtual exhibits, and teaching gardens will create new living wage jobs in environmental conservation and the cultural arts on the east side of St. Paul. The building will also be a green net zero carbon model for climate resilient construction. So the history and environmental and cultural heritage programming that we offer at the site will impact generations to come, and our conservative estimates that we anticipate serving about 35,000 people annually, including nearly 5,000 St. Paul Public School fifth graders who already visit this site as part of the St. Paul Public Schools implementation of the Bidote curriculum. So this will really be an asset for a lot of folks and people who are doing work already in this area. Through our Indigenous-led but not Indigenous-exclusive engagement model, Wilcon Teepee Center will not really be a typical museum or interpretive center, but serve as a transformative healing space that will really shift the urban environment on the east side of St. Paul. And so I'm just really inspired to hear from other folks doing this type of work on the east side. You know, we currently rent space at the Latino Economic Development Center at the East Side Enterprise Center. So there's just some amazing things happening on the east side of St. Paul right now. And I'm really excited to be presenting just on this project as part of this really transformation that's happening on the east side.
Ms. Lawrence, can I have you wrap up, please?
Yes. I just want to quickly touch on the economic impacts of this. We're going to be using a community wealth building model, and we've been working with the Minnesota University of Minnesota Carlson School of Management, who conducted a study for that and informs our work. It's going to bring a lot of new investment, and we anticipate at least $140,000 annually of indirect investment to the east side of St. Paul economy with this project. So if anybody has any questions, I'd love to answer them, but that's all I'll say for now.
Thank you, Ms. Lawrence, and thank you, Chair Lilly, for bringing this forward. Members, this wrap up the equity-related portion of the agenda. Next up, we have Representative Hewitt, House File 1753. Please proceed, Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members, for giving me the opportunity to present this. This is a very simple, straightforward bill. Many of us have had the opportunity to work with the food lines that we've had during the last 2 years. This consortium basically is asking us to help them with their infrastructure in the tone of $7.3 million. What they're looking for is to continue the service that they've already started. Many parts of this consortium are in our communities already. They are here to testify, and I'm going to turn it over to them right away. I believe it is Mary McCowan, President of Keystone Communities.
Ms. McCowan, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Mary McCowan. I'm President of Keystone Community Services, and today I'm representing a coalition of food shelf hunger relief organizations that are seeking one-time infrastructure support from the state of Minnesota. I want to thank Representative Hewitt for carrying this bill forward and Chair Lee and the committee for giving me an opportunity to speak today on behalf of our coalition. As you all know, before the pandemic, Minnesotans were visiting food shelves and that number was increasing steadily, which has strained the infrastructure of all of our organizations long before the pandemic. Minnesota food shelf usage in 2020 hit an all-time high, and the number of seniors visiting food shelves has increased by 30%. Across the state, food shelf organizations modified, changed, shifted, and did everything we could to meet the significant increase in need in food resources. Many of the people who are coming to us have never visited a food shelf before or reached out and asked for help. At a Keystone-sponsored drive-through food distribution last month in Roseville, of the 2,800 people who received food at that food distribution, 60% of them have never gotten services from Keystone in the past. The need for food supports in our community continues to be high and will be for months to come for people like Julia. Julia lives in a suburban community in Ramsey County. She first came to Keystone in April of 2020 when her job hours were reduced due to the pandemic. The food and household supplies that she's able to get monthly from Keystone are helping her stabilize her household while she deals with her new financial realities. One of the things she learned when she was at the food shelf was that she was also able to bring food back for her elderly neighbors who also need food resources. And so she's doing that every month, and she's always looked out for her elderly neighbors and is thrilled that while she's getting help, she's able to help others too. Her hours continue to be reduced, and she isn't sure when she's going to work full time again. There are thousands of families like Julia's across the state of Minnesota who are unsure about their financial future, and our organizations have been there every step of the way, helping over 52,000 Minnesota residents with our organizations alone make sure that they have the food and the resources that they need. Hunger relief organizations like ours have been incredibly innovative in responding to the increased need, but we simply do not have the adequate building infrastructure to store, sort, and distribute the food that our community needs to keep up with these increased demands. The capital investment projects included in this bill will provide $7 million in state funds for 4 hunger relief organizations across the state of Minnesota, $3 million to Keystone Community Services, $1.5 million to Southern Anoka Community Assistance, $1.5 million to 360 Communities, and $1 million to Community Pathways of Steele County. These funds will be matched and exceeded by funding from our community donations, bringing an additional $7+ million in investments in the communities of the coalition members. Our food shelf programs were at capacity before the pandemic, and we anticipate needs will only increase due to the long economic recovery that's ahead for our low-income residents in Minnesota. Seniors and families need healthy food resources to help them stay in their homes, pay their bills, and stay focused on work and school. Please support House File 1753 to provide one-time funds to expand the infrastructure of our food shelves so we can provide more food to more people and help our community. Thank you for your time today and for your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. McCowan. So I may have misspoken about previous bill was House File 1753. Next on the agenda is House File 2464. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Chair Lee, and thank you, members, again, for listening to my bill here. It's basically, this is the infrastructure, asset preservation bill for the Minnesota Historical Society. we've made a commitment as legislators, the last 5,000 of us have at least, to make sure that we preserve these assets of the state, from the Split Rock Lighthouse to the Jeffers petroglyphs. It's really important that we are able to have our history there and be able to interpret it. We need to continue to preserve these assets. I'm going to quickly turn it over to the CEO of the Minnesota History Center, Historical Society, Mr. Kent Whiteworth.
Mr. Whiteworth, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Chair Lee, members of the committee. My name is Kent Whiteworth, and I'm the director and CEO of the Minnesota Historical Society. I appreciate the opportunity to take just a few minutes to talk about the asset preservation needs at MNHS. And Representative Hewitt, thank you so much for authoring the bill, and thank you for your passion for history and for bringing it forward to the committee. I'd like to just remind everybody that MNHS manages, on behalf of the state of Minnesota, a historic site network that includes 26 different sites open to the public and more than 150 historic structures on the grounds. We've had the privilege to visit with many of you in the last couple of weeks or months, and we're grateful for that. As the representative said, the network really kind of spans from Split Rock Lighthouse up in the northeast portion of the state, down to the southwest to Jeffers Petroglyphs, and literally everything in between. You see the bullets there. One of the things that I'd like to reinforce, though, is these historic structures are significant. They're important buildings in their own right, but they also are valuable because they are the place where we present interpretive programs. These programs are designed based on the priorities of our strategic plan. You see those priorities before you, but I would just point out the inclusion and diversity strategic priority at MNHS. We welcome and serve all Minnesotans, and that means collecting and sharing the stories of all Minnesotans. And frankly, I was inspired by the previous testifiers and the emphasis on equity. And so MNHS is committed to inclusion, equity, and diversity. And I think you will find that in our interpretive programs at all the historic sites. The next image talks a little bit about, or just presents the laundry list, if you will, that totals more than $10 million. This is the prioritized list of projects within our network. And I will at this point mention that we are falling behind. Our requests have been much higher than the appropriations. And as any of you, as you take care of your own properties, your own homes, once you start to get behind, that's not a great place to find yourself in. So these are prioritized projects that we'd really like to move forward on as soon as possible. I'll just give you a couple of quick highlights of the network. We start with Split Rock. You see this gorgeous view that so many of us have enjoyed along the North Shore. But let me remind you that one of the projects recently completed is a new HVAC system for the visitor center. So some of these projects aren't always the most publicly appealing, but they're absolutely critical to the safety and the quality of experience. Perfect example of Split Rock is this accessibility project, and you see the paths that we are trying to add to that historic site so that everyone will have greater access to that spectacular view there at the lighthouse. Historic Forestville is another example. I think of the Meehan family that came to southeast Minnesota in the mid-19th century, and today we talk about what is it that makes a place a home, and what is it that makes a family leave their home and start anew? That's the story of Forestville. You see the asset preservation needs. You see some before and after scenes of what these funds have been able to do. But those are the kinds of stories that we think all Minnesotans can relate to, and Forestville is a great example of that. Moving on from Forestville, you're all familiar with Historic Fort Snelling. One of the projects that's on that list is work to the Round Tower. But this is certainly a military story at Fort Snelling, but it's much more than that. there's a 10,000-year history at the confluence of the two rivers at Bedote, and we are focusing on that broader narrative. Mill City Museum, you get a sense of the scale of this property. One thing I'll say about Mill City very quickly is we are one of the few places in America that are managing ruins, and you know the fire from the early 1990s, and many of these materials that we try to preserve were never meant to be in the elements. So there are particular preservation challenges at Mill City. And I'll wrap up quickly with the Hill House, which is just right down the street from the Capitol. And you see that there's intrusion of water that's created challenges at Mill City. So that gives you a very quick tour across our network. We thank you so much for your consideration of our request and are happy to follow up after the hearing with additional information.
Representative Rasmussen, a quick question or comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wanted to thank Representative Hewitt for bringing this bill forward and just thank the Minnesota Historical Society. I know it's been a challenging year for them to do history and to allow Minnesotans to access history of this last year, but I'm just very supportive of their work and just truly believe that the different sites and assets that they have are truly statewide assets that every Minnesotan gets to benefit from. In the district that I represent, you know, the Historical Society was involved with helping publish a history on the city of Fergus Falls after their 150th anniversary. History Day students getting to go to these facilities, field trips, tourism dollars. And so just really appreciate the thoughtful proposal before us today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for the comments, Representative Rasmussen. Next up is Representative Olson, House Language Code of CG 111-1. Please proceed, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. So the Lake Superior Zoo was originally founded in 1923 and is now home to more than 350 animals. They provide a variety of educational opportunities and participate in conservation initiatives. This bill provides $1.1 million to deed geobonds via deed to the City of Duluth for asset preservation to the Lake Superior Zoo. These funds would help make necessary improvements to the facility, including accessibility and walking surface improvements, lighting upgrades, and additional deferred maintenance, as well as drainage improvements on the Black Bear exhibit pool. And with that, I will turn it over to my testifier, Ms. Cope, the Chief Executive Officer at the Lake Superior Zoo.
Ms. Cope, please identify yourself for the record and proceed.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair Lee, Representative Olson, and committee members. My name is Haley Cope, and I am the CEO at the Lake Superior Zoo. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen so I can quickly go through just the request that we have on the table today. So our mission at the Lake Superior Zoo is to provide close-up animal experiences that inspire connections to wildlife and action toward conservation in our region here in Minnesota and around the world. And some of those photos you'll see there is kind of our mission in action, and funding from capital investment from the state allows us to continue to provide these close-up experiences and serve our community. So just a quick 101 history and what's going on today at the zoo. Like Representative Olson said, we were founded in 1923. We are the 19th oldest zoo in the United States. So as you can assume, along with that comes with some old infrastructure. Our main building and our pathways are many decades old. Adapting to the pandemic, this past year has been difficult for nonprofit organizations, and we were definitely not immune to that. We faced two closures to help stop and slow the spread of COVID-19. We pivoted to a reopening strategy that has been very successful, and we're so thankful to our community members for supporting us. We also introduced free learning virtual learning opportunities like our virtual Zoomobiles to schools in the region and around the state. Our AZA accreditation is upcoming in 2022, and that's why this project is so important to us today. The Association of Zoos and Aquariums is the kind of general organization that oversees only 10% of zoos and aquarium facilities in the United States that receive that accreditation, and we're one of three in the state. Being accredited by the AZA is critical to our operations as we work to accomplish our mission. This accreditation means we uphold the highest standards across multiple facets of operations, including animal care and welfare, safety, and more. So again, our asset preservation request today is $1.1 million. And that will give us the necessary upgrades to continue to obtain that accreditation and prepare for that, such as the walking surfaces and accessibility at the front entrance and circulation throughout zoo grounds, upgrade lighting throughout facilities, looking at some LED and energy cost savings, addressing our front entrance canopy paint issues and additional deferred maintenance. Additionally, connective drainage work and improvements on existing Black Bear exhibit pool. So here's a couple of photos that are just some examples of areas at the zoo that are in much need of preservation for us to be able to continue our mission and be able to provide an educational, fun, and of course, safe experience for guests from Duluth, the state of Minnesota, and beyond. Our vision, if awarded these funds, is to preserve the historic Lake Superior Zoo so that it can be enjoyed by all people for generations to come. I greatly appreciate the opportunity to provide this information on our important request today, and I would welcome any questions at this time.
Thank you, Ms. Cope, and thank you, Representative Olson. Next up on the agenda is Representative Ryer, House File 2081. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. I'm pleased to introduce House File 2181, which requires energy guidelines for state buildings to incorporate provisions that address resiliency with respect to climate change. There is no cost associated with this bill. At our joint session with the Climate and Energy Committee, we had the opportunity to hear about this from Richard Graves, Director of the Center for Sustainable Building Research at the University of Minnesota. I'd like to now turn this presentation over to Professor Graves to tell us more about this bill.
Professor Graves, please proceed.
Thank you, Representative Ryer, Chair Lee, and members of the committee. In 2018, the Center for Sustainable Building Research completed a study funded by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency titled Resilient Adaptation of Sustainable Buildings. The study looked at the potential integration of resilient design into the Minnesota Sustainable Building Guidelines, known as B3. As you know, B3 is a set of tools and programs designed to make buildings more energy efficient and sustainable, and has been working with state-funded projects for almost 20 years now. The B3 programs have been developed for and are required for all state-funded projects in Minnesota. The study found that some of the existing guidelines have aspects that do enhance sustainability and resilience, such as enhanced site design for stormwater management to deal with localized flooding and other climate change effects. The SB 2030 energy and carbon standard required for B3 enhances buildings to be more energy efficient and reduce loads so that they integrate more effectively with on-site renewable energy and the potential for battery storage to achieve net zero energy and carbon. While the B3 guidelines provide a good base for resilient building, there's an opportunity to expand the guidelines to create more robust buildings that are better able to handle disasters and disturbances and respond to climate change effects. Some measures should be modified and some new measures could be incorporated. Potential measures include use of on-site renewables to generate energy to meet critical loads, including battery storage and renewable energy systems capable of storing critical energy demands during disturbances, enabling microgrid strategies to share reserve power or generation capacity on campuses and in community scenarios, elevating mechanical and electrical equipment to avoid localized flooding events, considering designs for dual mode operation, day-to-day, and also emergency low power modes, enhancing structures and facade elements and site landscape to withstand extreme weather events, and then educating building owners, operators, users, and stakeholders on resilient features, operations, and planning. Inclusions of these measures will lead to buildings and the people in those buildings to be better able to deal with disaster events, emergencies, and respond to the effects of climate change. New guidelines will continue to be reviewed to be cost-effective both in initial capital costs and also in long-term operational costs. Thank you for your time.
Professor Graves, can you identify yourself for the record, please?
Oh, sorry. I'm the director of the Center for Sustainable Building Research at the University of Minnesota, and we manage the B3 guidelines for the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Professor Graves, and thank you, Representative Ryer. Next up on the agenda is my bill, House File 2320. I will continue to preside as chair and members. As we have seen with some of the requests around Regional Public Safety Center, over the last few years, we have seen some requests for regional and county jails. And so I wanted to see if we could have the Department of Corrections do a report to study the need of regional and county jails to take a look at consolidation or mergers of county jails and alternatives to incarcerations for people experiencing mental health disorders. And we're requesting the DLC to consult with county sheriffs, county and city attorneys, and public defenders, chief law enforcement officers, administrator of county jails and facilities, and district court administrators to really assess the need that we have. And with us today, I did not work with the commissioner, but the commissioner, Commissioner Snell, is willing to come by and testify on this bill today. And so I'll proceed with Commissioner Snell.
Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for the opportunity to come in. And I want to thank you for bringing this measure forward. One of the things that I think I've learned from having conversations with you and Chair Murphy, when she formally led this committee, is that really these are big policy decisions. And bonding and these capital investments are really a focus on the state policy. And we know that jails and these sorts of facilities have major costs to communities. And we think it's really wise that there is bringing together of a variety of stakeholders to look at these issues and to study them and ultimately to develop a more comprehensive policy that might help counties save money, be more efficient, and meet the ever-changing demands of people who enter the criminal justice system. And I think at the end of the day, ultimately, it's to help people be successful outside the criminal justice system. And that's why we should exist. So I just wanted to come in and give voice to the fact that we stand fully supportive of this measure and look forward to the opportunity to work together to develop good policies around this.
Commissioners, now, since we have you in front of us, I do have two questions for you. Currently, and as recently as this past week, I understand that DLC has been making recommendations to county boards and around the feasibility of regional or joint jails between two or more counties. Are you looking at factors such as how COVID has impacted jail populations with or without impact to public safety, and are you making any recommendations accordingly?
Yes, I think, Mr. Chair, that's a great question. We know that even the Association of Minnesota Counties is looking at the fact that, you know, there was a significant reduction in population, both in state correctional facilities as well as county facilities, and there was not a representative uptick in crime as you look at the look across the board. And so the reality is that there is ways for us to be able to manage this. You know, we do think that it is important that we take this comprehensive view. That has not always been part of our history in terms of the role we play. There are a number of jails that are facing sunsets. We are, this committee has invested in the last October's bonding bill, you know, $44 million was invested in local facilities. So we do think that looking at what we can learn from COVID is really important from a public policy standpoint, both for the state as well as local communities who grapple with how do we keep up with the burdens of the demands of maintaining these facilities and the needs of people who are in them. And so the opportunity for the systems to come together and really explore what that could look like and the challenges and solutions to those challenges is something that we think is critical. And so we definitely are moving more in the direction of taking, of working with the counties to really explore all options, not just to build a jail that meets their needs today. And we know that oftentimes people say, well, we're going to build a jail that meets the future needs. And that simply means that we can put more people in jail. And we have to remember that at the end of the day, it has to be about public safety, and it has to be about representing the fact that, you know, these are criminal justice issues, these are economic issues, and human rights issues, given the fact that many people that are sitting in jails can't afford to pay the bail, whereas others can. So I think we do think that this is an opportune time for us as a state to take a look at this, and as the DOC, as the regulatory body who oversees many of these and approves many of these construction projects, that we will be taking a very different approach to working with the counties and really looking at have you assessed the fullest range of possibilities for the good of your county and even the region. We know that many of these counties simply are facing really difficult challenges in making investments that are often $30 to $50 million.
Thank you, Commissioner Snow. And one last question for you as we make considerations around some of these local requests. I understand that the Department of Correction is currently required by statute to give advice to county boards if they ought to build a new jail or to expand. Within your current authority, Commissioner, are you able to do a deeper dive into the local policies around arrests, pretrial detention, bail issues, et cetera, as I have laid out in my bill? And do you make recommendations broader than just those related to the physical infrastructure?
And I, Mr. Chair, I think one of the reasons I really think your bill is important is that you set a framework for requiring us as the regulatory body to be asking different kinds of questions. In the past, it was often, you know, does the facility meet the standards, the national and state standards around jail construction, space for programming, and so forth, all important issues. But this bill, I think, prompts us to ask broader and bigger questions that should be asked as we consider these types of investments and what represents good public policy.
Thank you, Commissioner Snell, for coming by to provide some public testimony today. Next on the agenda is Chair Murphy, language code of CG-108. Chair Murphy. Chair Murphy, you are on mute right now.
Yes, I'm excited. Commissioner Snell, you've risen to the occasion once again that we've asked for you, and we look forward to working with you on your continued analysis that you're going to present back to us. Mr. Chair, the asset preservation part of state public, county and public and city libraries has been stagnant for a long, long time. And this is a year for asset preservation reports. And Liz Lynch, the executive director of Lake Agassiz Regional Library System, is on ready to tell you the importance of the small library grant program that has been in existence for a long time, but at a stagnant amount of money. And in the past bonding bill, we raised the amount that could be put into a small grant. And so I would like to listen to Ms. Lynch tell of the importance of the library grants.
Ms. Lynch, if you could keep your remarks within 2 minutes, that would be greatly appreciated. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Sounds good. Good morning, everyone, Chair Lee and members of the committee. My name is Liz Lynch, and I'm the executive director of the Lake Agassiz Regional Library System, which is headquartered in Moorhead, Minnesota. Thank you for this opportunity to speak to you today on behalf of the 12 regional public library systems, which provide public library service in over 365 communities across the state. And of course, thank you, Representative Murphy, for your support of a $3 million library bonding bill for construction and renovation grants for public libraries. This past year was a true test for public libraries, but we rose to the occasion and went above and beyond to meet the needs of our community members. We were pivoting left and right to offer library services as safely, efficiently, and effectively as we could. And if we've learned anything from this pandemic, we've learned that libraries play a vital role in Minnesota's educational and social infrastructure. As public library services continue to be in high demand around the state and throughout the nation, we need to make sure that our library facilities are functional, accessible, and are able to provide the proper space and functionality to help people succeed. Since 1995, over 150 communities have benefited from the library projects funded by the Library Construction Grant Program. Grants ranging from $3,000 to $1 million have assisted in renovation projects that have improved ADA accessibility and have provided funding for new construction. Currently, approximately 30 public libraries across the state are in need of construction projects. While the total price tag of these projects is upwards of $50 million, the matching portion from this construction grant program is currently around $11 million. So while we need $11 million, $3 million is a great start at chipping away at these projects. With $3 million, we can leverage local funds to make progress for our community members. Please support our $3 million request to ensure that public libraries can continue to provide accessible and equitable services to our community members. Through this dollar-for-dollar matching construction program, we can ensure that we're operating efficient and effective facilities that provide the necessary services and space to help people succeed. Thank you for your consideration this morning.
Thank you, Ms. Lynch, and thank you, Chair Murphy, for bringing this bill forward. A member, that concludes our agenda for today. I just want to give you a roadmap for the week ahead and for members of the public. So on Sunday, April 11th, we will be posting the DE amendment in a spreadsheet for this committee. It will be House File 337, the Omnibus 2021 Bonding Bill. The committee will meet three times next week on Monday, April 12th at 1 o'clock for the rollout and walkthrough of the DE amendment. On Wednesday, April 14th at 1 p.m., we'll take public testimony. And on Friday, April 16th at 8:30, we'll take amendments and markup. There will be a 24-hour rule in place for amendments. Detailed notification will be coming out today to outline the schedule for all of you. And thank you, members, for all the work that you have done so far this session. This meeting is adjourned.